Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante, and he is the snowed-in Dustin Schutte. Dustin, how you doing, my friend?
I'm staying warm inside and not dealing with the elements at the moment. So I'm doing all right. How about you?
Well, I didn't get quite nearly as much snow as you did out there in the Midwest. What did you tell me? 8 to 10 inches?
Yeah. We somewhere in that neighborhood. And then you know, there's no break. We get the break of snow and then there's like a little gap. And then I think it's supposed to be windy and drift all that stuff across the roadways and everything. So it's an unpleasant experience at the moment, but we'll get through it. This is not good for my former Georgia, Florida blood, Jim.
You let it thin out there. Well, yeah. Welcome home, my friend. Welcome home to the Midwest. All I could say, and no offense, but better the you than us. So I'm going to go fair with enough. That. And you know what? Considering you were snowed in, I was thinking about just antagonizing you for today's show, okay? I usually write myself an agenda where I want to go with the show. And my great temptation was just to do this to you, Dustin. Just say, Paul Feinbaum, Nick Saban, Southeast Conference, ESPN, go. Do your worst.
That was your plan to get me going this afternoon, Jim.
Yes, it was. I thought that would carry us through an hour show.
Well, usually it would. But you know what is great about this and great about bowl games and everything else is the Big Ten going 4-1 against the SEC, and all we had to hear about. Well, let me rephrase that. We didn't hear anything. Those SEC people that were complaining about Indiana making the playoff, about how SMU didn't deserve a spot to be there, blah, blah, blah. The only one who turned out to be right just because his team blew out Duke was Lane Kiffin. So I'm sure we're not going to get a break from him. I had to put him on mute on social media because I was tired of seeing his antics. But nonetheless, I think what's going to probably happen is the SEC apologists are going to say, well, you know, it's just bold. These games didn't matter. A lot of these guys had people that were opting out. But the Big Ten was, with the exception of the Missouri-Iowa game, which was an evenly matched, basically coin flip game, came down to the final possession. The Big Ten proved it was the best conference all season. And to me, it doesn't matter what happens the rest of the way. The only team left from the SEC was a team that was playing in the Big 12 like 10 months ago, right? So the Big 10 was the best conference. Proven that now, and there's really nothing they can say. But I can't wait till next year when they have 8 teams ranked in the top 11.
Well, and the other ones that I don't think you mentioned was about South Carolina and Alabama losing to Illinois and Michigan. And especially that Alabama loss to Michigan, where Michigan was the team missing most of their players, and they still beat Alabama. And I do want to give you a quote that I heard from Nick Saban, and it kind of, I think, proves a theory that I have. And this is legitimate in sports. I think it's the case in politics. When you go too far, too extreme, You expose yourself for who you are. And I think those entities, Feinbaum, Southeast Conference, ESPN analysts, they went so far that they've lost their credibility. And let me give you an example. Nick Saban was asked about Alabama losing to Michigan. And most of his answer was actually very humble. There was humility there about Alabama and how they played. But he still had to add in there, you know, though, when a team just misses the playoffs, it's hard for them to get up for a bowl game like this. And, you know, part of me intellectually says, like, okay, there's some legitimacy to that. But these guys have been spouting off for so long that it's hard to give any credibility to anything he says.
Yeah, I think that's certainly the case. And what would be interesting from a Nick Saban perspective, because I think he and both Paul Feinbaum ate a piece of humble pie. Feinbaum did say, like, I'm waving the white flag. I was wrong about Alabama. More so than Kirk Herbstreit, by the way, which is very odd. Herbstreit has done a heel turn quicker than anything I've ever seen, maybe. But I would be interested to know if Saban's thoughts and his comments about the bowl game actually had more to do with, like, the Alabama fan base not losing control on Kalen DeBoer and kind of, putting a little cushion there and a buffer. Because imagine when you have that much talent, you're Kalen DeBoer, you just played the national championship game with Washington last year, and then you go to Alabama and you go 9-3, you have some ugly losses on the resume, and then you get beat by a mediocre Michigan team in a bowl game. I think that Saban, obviously, and some of those other guys we mentioned, dug themselves into a pretty deep hole. But I think the fact that he acknowledged that he was wrong and that Michigan was the better team that day, I do kind of, this is maybe me giving him too much of a pass. So I, talking out of both sides of my mouth here, but I do wonder if that's just like a call to the Alabama fans, like, hey, settle down. It was a good season. It's hard to get those players up for this game. Why don't you give him a little bit of a break? But you never know. Like you said, when it goes, you've been too far and so extreme for so long, why would anybody give you the benefit of the doubt when you're talking like that?
Well, that's it, and none of them. And you mentioned Herbstreit, who's a guy who had all the respect in the world, essentially probably the voice of college football with the most credibility. And for him to go down that path and the rest of the ESPN crew going there, like I said, I think they pushed it too far. And now you have everybody just looking to jump on the opportunity when you have the embarrassing losses like South Carolina and Alabama. Then you go into, I'll use this as the segue to get to the actual games from last week. You know, Georgia losing to Notre Dame. Yes, their quarterback was out, but not a great performance by Georgia when you only managed to put up 10 points.
No, not at all. And that was maybe, I don't know if that was the most surprising, because I believe I was on this show saying I thought Notre Dame would win that game because of the fact that Georgia was without their starting quarterback. And at times this season, they just didn't look like Georgia, like the traditional Georgia that we were accustomed to seeing. I think you could even look at that last game of the season, of the regular season. They played Georgia Tech at home, and it took a couple overtimes for them to beat the Yellow Jackets. So, I think what's getting lost in this is the fact that Notre Dame's defense is really, really good. And they have a quarterback in Riley Leonard who is unique. I don't think a lot of people, even though he's been this way for most of his career, a dual threat guy, and he just doesn't get the same credit as some of those other quarterbacks in college football. So I thought it was actually more about Notre Dame, but certainly when you've seen Georgia just dominate teams left and right for the last, 4 to 5 years, and they come away with 10 points and just look, not only were they beaten, but they looked like the inferior team. This wasn't a game where it came down to the last play. This was a game where outside of like the first, 10 minutes of that game, Notre Dame just looked like the more dominant team.
They really did. And, talking about Georgia during the season, not being the traditional Georgia, and we saw that a couple times they struggled for wins. Was it Kentucky that they escaped with a 1-point win? And, circling back, I think that was the case for several of those Southeast Conference teams. Using Alabama again, they didn't lose three games. They lost, three games where they were, at least two touchdown, maybe even 20-point favorites, to Vanderbilt, Oklahoma, and Michigan. The spread on that game was huge. Those weren't just losses. They were embarrassing losses. And again, using Notre Dame as an example, well, you could have a bad day at the office one week, Northern Illinois. A lot of credit to Notre Dame bouncing back from that. But Alabama, we kept seeing that over and over again to the point where, you know, the validity of that whole argument, well, they would have been better than SMU or Indiana. I'm not sure they would have been.
No, I don't think so. You look at Georgia, and again, as you mentioned, they were without Carson Beck, so that does make a difference. But if you put those two games, Georgia, Notre Dame, and Indiana, Notre Dame, side by side, is there really much of a difference? So the thought, when you translate that back to Alabama, who's to say the Alabama that played Oklahoma or Vanderbilt wasn't going to be the Alabama that showed up? I think everybody just assumes that if you put Ole Miss or Alabama or South Carolina in there, that you're going to get the team that showed up looking its very best, when you might get the team that showed up against Oklahoma. Or for Ole Miss, you might get the team that lost to Kentucky. So, there's no guarantee that you're going to get the best version of these teams. So, to me, Notre Dame's win over Georgia was like validation and vindication for Indiana fans. Because they were like, see, Notre Dame's actually a pretty good team. Oh, and by the way, we had to play them on the road. We didn't get a neutral site game against them. That makes a difference as well.
Exactly. And the thing about that Notre Dame win against Georgia, that really also told you what this Notre Dame team is all about. They play defense. They don't make mistakes. They want you to make the mistakes. And also, when you saw a play like that punt where he took 11 men off the field, that was planned. They were prepped. They were ready. I'm referring to Notre Dame. And Georgia was not ready. And they were just plain outcoached in that element there.
Yeah. I mean, I thought, look, Marcus Freeman, here's what's funny about this whole thing, Jim. And this is not relevant to the game, but it is relevant to our SEC slander. Brian Kelly left Notre Dame, a place where he didn't think that they could compete with teams like Alabama, LSU, Georgia. He went to mighty LSU, where he thought he could win a national championship. Notre Dame is now down to the Final Four, and they look like they could win a national championship. We'll talk about that later, I'm sure. And meanwhile, does anybody know what Brian Kelly's doing right now? He's sitting on his couch. Is he doing kind of the same thing we're doing, just kind of hanging around, watching these games on TV, Jim?
He's on the Barca Lounger watching, but I suspect he's not enjoying it nearly as much as you and I are, Dustin. All right, that is it for quarter number one. We got lots more to go. Stick with us. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Big Ten Sports Illustrated writer Dustin Schutte. It's quarter number two of our show. Dustin, as you put it, we were slandering the Southeast Conference in the first quarter of our show. I never get my fill of that, by the way. So if I try to interject it back in later on the show, it's not me repeating myself. It's me just trying to get another dig in. Okay, so I hope you could appreciate that. Anyway. We were talking a bit about Notre Dame, and we got into the Notre Dame-Georgia game. I want to hit the other quarterfinal matchups, but I thought it was interesting in watching the Notre Dame game against Georgia. I started asking, just how good is that Notre Dame defense? Caused me to look through their regular season. By the way, do you know they allowed more than 20 points only twice the whole season?
I don't think I knew that specific stat. I knew that they had a really good defense, but that one, I did not know that.
Even in their loss to Northern Illinois, they didn't allow 20 points. And I think it was just Louisville who they beat 31-24, and USC game, which was a kind of a crazy game. They won at 49-35, so they gave up 35 points and 24 points in those two games, the only games that they gave up more than 20 points. So, yes, that Notre Dame defense is legitimate, and we saw it against Georgia. Even if Georgia was with their backup quarterback, I thought that was pretty impressive. Let's take a look at these other quarterfinal games, and I want to get your thoughts. Oh, man, Ohio State at their best, Dustin. I don't think just the best team in the country. They are by far the best team in the country. Nobody else boat races Oregon and gets out to a 34-0 lead.
Yeah, I remember. Now, this is a little bit of a short story, but maybe I had too much champagne on New Year's Eve. And so I watched the first few minutes of the Ohio State game. Dozed off a little bit, woke up, and saw it was like 31-0, and I said a swear at the TV because I couldn't believe it. That was, I think somebody summed this up perfectly. I don't know that I agree with it 100%, but the gist of it is that the frustration with Ohio State isn't necessarily that they lost to Oregon in the first game. It certainly was that they lost to Michigan, but the frustration about Ohio State's season was a lot of people knew that this Ohio State team we saw in the Rose Bowl was there the entire time, and it took until now to unleash it. Better late than never. They're playing their best football at exactly the right time. But this was aggressive Ryan Day, like double middle fingers. I'm going to air it out because I've got the best receivers in the country, and I've got a pretty good quarterback, and I'm going to trust my defense to get stops. This is what I think everybody wanted to see. This is, if they played like this in every game, I think they would have won by two touchdowns every single week. Like, they would have been undefeated Big Ten conference champions. And a little bit of this is Oregon. This goes back to also what I talked about a few weeks ago when we discussed. It was going to be interesting to me to see how these teams fared that had a bye week as opposed to a team that played, you know, 10 days before whatever the math worked out to be. So was there a little bit of rust there from Oregon? It's also really difficult to beat the same team twice. So, but I just thought that Ohio State team is, if that team takes the field, they are untouchable.
They are, which makes you wonder, you never, Ohio State was at their best that first half in jumping out to the 34-0 lead. Oregon, probably a little bit rusty. But rust does not account for a 34-0 game, right, Dustin. And what it makes me wonder about is the whole, you know, the way they played against Michigan and even the way they played against Penn State. You know, you have those weapons. Unleash them. Let them loose, Dustin. And Ryan Day certainly didn't do that. Maybe – I was listening to an interview with a Notre Dame writer, and he actually put out the theory that he thought that Notre Dame losing to Northern Illinois early in the season was actually good for them. It refocused them, rededicated them, made them look at every game as a must win, which it was, to make the playoffs. And you wonder if the way Ohio State came out after the Michigan loss, and my thinking when it went into Tennessee, this could go one of two ways. Either Ohio State folds the tent, or they say, wait a minute, that's not us. And I think all those things that they said about Notre Dame and Northern Illinois, we could probably say about Ohio State and that Michigan loss.
I think so, because, and usually I don't necessarily agree with that. I don't think you have to lose a game in order to get your focus. But in this sense, I think Ryan Day probably felt the pressure of, look, I've got to at least put up a fight against Tennessee to keep my job, or to at least feel safe that I'm going to keep my job. And he saw how well it worked against Tennessee and is like, well, if we beat Oregon, we get to the Final Four. This was the recipe to beat Tennessee. This is how we're going to be able to beat Oregon. And the thing that I think a lot of people are going to look at, we talk about opening it up, and we're talking about throwing the football because you got such dynamic receivers, and you have such Jeremiah Smith, I think, even as a freshman, is probably the best receiver in the game. Like, that guy looks like he is NFL ready right now. But the other interesting aspect of this, too, is how much that opened up the rushing attack. They had over 300 passing yards against Tennessee and against Oregon. They ran for 150 against Tennessee, and I think 180, somewhere in that neighborhood, just shy of 200 against Oregon. That's the type of balance they've been wanting. And I think at times, Ryan Day has been so adamant about getting those rushing numbers up, being a threat on the ground. Guess what happens when you throw the ball? It opens up the rushing attack. And now I think Ryan Day maybe finally, I don't want to say finally understands, he's a really good offensive coach. He knows how to get his guys ready. I don't think he's scared anymore of not having a rushing attack.
You know what? Save that narrative, because I think we might need it again when talking about, you know, that the Penn State Boise State game. So when we get there, if you don't give that narrative again, I will. So let's hit the other quarterfinal matchup, which was Texas and Arizona State, which was absolutely, Dustin, a classic college football game, memorable. And when people question the 12-team playoff, I want to just show them a tape of this game. That game alone made all the other games worthwhile, in my opinion. It was just tremendous college football.
Yeah, and in a 4-team field, Arizona State would have not even been close to being considered. Right? Like, they are a fringe top 25 team, and they're probably playing in a solid bowl game, but they're not playing in a college football playoff. And despite getting down 24-8, 17-3 early in that game, they came up and Cam Scadaboo. I love saying that name, by the way. It's just a fun Scadaboo's a fun name to say. He gave us one of the all-time greatest performances we've seen in a bowl game. And they came back to tie it up. We go to overtime. Like, that was just, that was by far the most fun game in the playoff, and maybe even all bowl season. And you're right, like, we don't get that in a 4-team playoff, but in this 12-team field, that was such a fun game. I was on the edge of my seat the entire time.
I was too. My, and this was not my anti-Southeast Conference thing going on here. I don't even consider Texas, you know, one of those traditional teams. So I didn't feel that way. But I have a buddy who's an Arizona State guy who we don't live in the same area. We don't reach out too often, but I reached out to him before this game because he was Arizona State. So we kind of went back and forth on it. And yeah, the legend of Cam Scadaboo that was just created for those who did. I saw him for the first time the week prior in the Big 12 conference championship game. And it's like, wow, this guy's for real. And we saw it again. And what was interesting, the couple plays I think you have to take away from this. First of all, got to ask your opinion. The targeting, non-targeting call. Your thoughts on that one?
Yeah. If you're not going to call that, then just eliminate targeting, is my opinion. I'm not saying that from a player safety standpoint. I'm saying it that nobody knows how to officiate it. And Jim, you were a former official, I think, for basketball, if I remember correctly. Yes. So But I personally don't like the idea that if it's targeting in the first quarter, it's targeting in the fourth quarter. Doesn't matter the game. Now, if it's a 50-50 call, I understand letting it go. But if it's clear and obvious, you have to blow the whistle. And to me, that, I don't know how much more clear it could be. That's just my opinion. But I'm interested to hear your take, because that was basically the difference in the game.
It's interesting. I think it was Doug Gottlieb who put out the you don't call it at that time of the game. And in basketball, there are times when early on you might make a call, you don't later, because you want to establish something. Like, guys, you just stop it. You know, that the rough stuff needs to be stopped. But at the end of the game, when you're, you know, where the ball is, and with this, I think the fact that it went to be reviewed, If it was just something that called or not called on the field and game went on, it'd be harder to question. But when someone said, hey, stop the game, we've got to do a video review of this, at that point, all those other circumstances go away. You and the entire world are watching this replay when you're that replay official. You've got to be aware of that. And like you said, if you can't call that targeting, there is no targeting, okay? That was the very definition of it. You've got to make the call. And I want to harken back to what I was saying earlier, though, Dustin, and another shot at the SEC, was Texas was the beneficiary of this. And I don't think it had anything to do with it, but because of the way ESPN has been, people started doing the conspiracy theory. You're making the call in favor of the Southeast Conference team. That's what I mean about they did that to themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I don't believe that conspiracy theory. But again, they have the rights to all the bowl games. They're in partnership with the SEC. They own the ranking show. So like, and I know other bowl games have been, or other playoff games have been aired on different networks. But when you lean into it this much, this is what you get. This is what the fans want to do.
That is exactly it. So it was self-inflicted that they were going to get a question, the conspiracy questions, when I think it was just a god-awful call. We're going to pick it up from here, Dustin, when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. He is Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer Dustin Schutte. It's quarter number three of our show, and we've been talking, first of all, before we get to the semifinals, we're wrapping up the quarterfinals of the college football playoff. We were talking about that Texas-Arizona State game. I, of course, come up with the negative. I give the, you know, the non-targeting call and make a big deal of that. But I am not a Texas fan in any way. I don't dislike them, don't like, whatever. But Quinn Ewers, 4th and 13 in overtime with the touchdown pass. If you're a Texas fan, does that not have to go down in Texas history as one of the all-time great plays?
I think so. I think it's up there with the any number that you want to choose from the Vince Young USC Rose Bowl championship game. I mean, that was an epic performance too. But yeah, I think Quinn Ewers pretty much solidified himself in Texas lore with that play and that game. And what's funny is, as poorly as Texas played at the end of that game, like, they made the plays when it mattered. And I thought, in overtime and later in those, I thought Arizona State had all the momentum, and all it takes is one play to completely shift it. And that's just what Texas did. And I don't know. It was a really fun game. I know for about 2.5, 3 quarters, it wasn't maybe necessarily so fun, but the fourth quarter and overtime just made it worth it so much. It was such a great game.
It really did. And it's the kind of thing, again, I just have to emphasize, no rooting interest really on my part. Just want to sit here and enjoy college football.
Yeah.
That's why that, and the 12-team playoff gives us many more opportunities than the 4-team playoff to have a game like this. All right. The one game we haven't hit on was Penn State beat Boise State 31-14. Looked like they could have ended the game early, Dustin. They're up 14-0. Looked like they were driving for touchdown number three. They fumble the ball. They hold on to it and score. I think the game would have been over right at that point. But, you know, remember when I made the statement earlier about Ohio State throwing the ball, or you made the statement, Ohio State throwing the ball, it opens up the running game. I think everyone will remember the running game from Penn State against Boise State, as it was against SMU. But what opens that up is Penn State was willing to go over the top, and they did it successfully, you know, to Omari Evans for a touchdown. I think that opens up other things, Dustin.
Yeah, because then that forces Boise State to be honest on the defensive side. And, like, I think Penn State could have run this. I think they could have ran the football probably 70 times if they wanted to and still won the game, simply because it looked like, at least early on. Now, I know Boise State bowed up a little bit and made it a bit of a game, but Penn State could have just worn them down in the trenches. But again, I like the aggressive play calling that James Franklin has this season loosened the chains on Andy Kotelnicki and allowing him to, you know, dial stuff up. And it just keeps defenses honest. And you look at the final stats, like Drew Aller didn't have a great stat line, 13-25, 171, 3 touchdowns and no interceptions. That was huge. And then, like you said, it opens up the ground attack. It forced Boise State to guess at times, and Penn State was able to take advantage. I do think that obviously that fumble was a momentum shifter, but Penn State's looking pretty good right now. And we'll see what happens against Notre Dame. But if they tape that, at least we talked about this all season. We talked about this before the Ohio State game. I think if Penn State keeps this mindset, if James Franklin is willing to air it out, we even saw it against Oregon, I think you feel better even if you lose that game, if you put all your chips on the table and you didn't hold anything back.
Exactly. And that's why I think a lot of Penn State fans were not too disappointed with the loss to Oregon. And again, I know it created some things that were great for Penn State fans, home playoff game and a nice path with the seeding. But as you said, they put it all out there against Oregon. Quick stat for you. Over these last three games, the conference championship game, 2 playoff games, Catron Allen, Nick Singleton, you know what their average yard per carry is, Dustin?
Oh, I don't know this, so I'm going to try to guess. I'm going to guess 5.3.
You would be wrong. And you know what? I'm even giving you like a margin of a yard. No. How about if I give you a margin of 2 yards? Still no, Dustin.
Wow.
Each one of them individually is averaging 7.8 yards per carry over these last three games. 7.8 yards. Is that just phenomenal? And I still feel like it's some of the other stuff they're doing is opening up the running game. But yeah, and Catron Allen himself has 328 yards over three games, which I'm no math major, but I think that's over 100 yards per game in these last three games. And Nick Singleton averages over 90 yards per game in these three games.
Pretty good recipe for success, especially when the quarterback can throw 3 touchdown passes.
Yes, yes, it really is a great recipe. Now, let me ask you this, and I always love getting your perspective because typically it's so incestuous. I'm getting Penn State one way or the other, both good and bad. You know, what does all this mean so far? But the narrative has gained national momentum. James Franklin cannot win a big game, okay? That's the narrative. It's still going forward. I mean, our old buddy Paul Feinbaum is picking Notre Dame to win. Why? Because Penn State, James Franklin has yet to beat a good team. What's your take on that? Has these two playoff wins, SMU, Boise State, should that put that narrative to rest or no?
So, first of all, I will answer your question. But first of all, I want to take this because I wanted to address this because it bothers me. Penn State's defense held Ashton Giante, who I think should have been the Heisman Trophy winner, to 104 yards on 30 carries, no touchdowns, 3.5 yards. I saw a lot of Penn State fans on Facebook, on social media, saying, Ashton Giante isn't that good. And I'm thinking in my head, that's a bigger insult to your defense than it is to Ashton Giante. Your defense is really good, and that's why it took him 30 carries to get 100 yards. So I just wanted to get that part out of the way and make it like, don't insult your defense. That guy can run the football. He did it against Oregon. He's been very successful this season. Still think he should have won the Heisman Trophy. That's beside the point. You don't win, and to the point about SMU and Boise State, I don't care if they're ACC, Group of Five, don't get to the Final Four if you don't win big games. You don't get into the playoff if you don't win big games. There's not a lot of coaches that have a great record against top five or top 10 teams. They're top five or top 10 teams. There is such a I don't even know what the right word would be, but there seems to be such a, I don't want to say force. A lot of people are stuck on trying to make James Franklin out to not be a good coach. I don't know why that is. This is the bottom line. And it's not, it might also be different if they snuck by. If they beat SMU 13-10 at home and they beat Boise State 17-14, maybe we're having a different conversation. SMU was never close. Penn State had a chance to put its foot on the throat, and Boise State made plays, and I think they showed you why they belonged in the college football playoff. James Franklin, to me, is a – I don't know where he ranks in terms of top five, top ten, but he's a top ten coach in college football, if not in the top five. So they're going to continue this narrative until – push the narrative is the word I was looking for 2 minutes ago when I started this. To me, it doesn't matter what happens to Notre Dame. He's confirmed himself as one of the top coaches in college football just because and maybe, Jim, maybe we'll see. The way he played against Oregon gave him a shot. The way he played against Minnesota, maybe he carries some of this momentum next year, and I don't know who Penn State plays, but maybe this will give them the chances to beat those top five teams that have eluded them. But to me, I don't care what happens against Notre Dame. This is – James Franklin deserves some credit, and he gets a lot more flack than I think he deserves.
I'm glad you said that, because I think it's the case also. And I think journalists are lazy. Okay. Present company excluded, of course, Dustin.
Yeah. No, I agree.
But they grab onto a national narrative, and that narrative is out there about James Franklin. And I think it's easy, and I think it's lazy. And I would like to see those people do their homework and say, hey, wait a minute. Like Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia over the last 5 to 10 years have just been so good. Nobody beats those teams. I mean, what is Ryan Day's record in the Big Ten? You know, he's lost those three games to Michigan. By the way, that's a Michigan team that made the playoffs and won a national championship. So those were pretty good Michigan teams. So, and if you look, I believe all those top games that he lost when he played top teams, he was the underdog. He was not the favorite in any of those games and blew it. So that's why I hate that narrative. We've been seeing it and hearing it so much. But with that said, now it's up against Notre Dame. I think you have a situation here where you can, if you're James Franklin, you could completely and totally change the narrative, not just for yourself as the coach, but also for your program.
Yeah, I agree. I think if they win, beat Notre Dame, I'm sure somebody will come up with some sort of excuse to still give him flack. But I think that would put a lot of those narratives to bed. And by the way, this is the other thing that I don't know, because I think you're right. I think a lot of journalists are just lazy, and they can't appreciate it's hard to win 10 games in college football, and James Franklin does it regularly. Look at what they did to Jim Harbaugh and how he couldn't beat Ohio State, struggled against Michigan State, struggled against the top 10. And then what happened? He won the Big Ten 3 straight years, got to the playoff 3 straight years, won a national championship. Like, it worked out okay for Michigan. Dabo Sweeney, when he was first at Clemson, could not beat South Carolina to save his life. And he's turned out to be a pretty good coach. Like, I know James Franklin's been there a while, but he's done some really, really good things at Penn State. And it's like, for whatever reason, we can never compliment a coach. It's just got to be negative, negative, negative.
Exactly. All right. We've got one more segment to go. We're going to preview the college football semifinals. Stay tuned.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. We are talking about the college football playoffs. Dustin, we've done enough looking back. Let's look forward. We've got two games set up here. First one, let's talk Ohio State versus Texas. Ohio State, I believe I saw as a six-point favorite over Texas. My goodness, the way Ohio State's playing, I'm not sure 6 points is enough of a spread.
I know. Somehow, Jim, Texas opened up as a three-point favorite. And if I could have, I don't gamble, but if I could have got that line, I might have bet my entire bank account on it, on Ohio State.
Where did you see that? Oh, my goodness. If you saw that, okay, you're not a betting man. I am. Whoa. Call me, Dustin. Where did you see that?
Next time I'll let you know. It opened and then it quickly changed. But if anybody got in on that, kudos to you. I don't think so. What's funny about this matchup, Jim, is I've seen a lot of people say, well, it kind of depends on which Texas team shows up. Is it going to be the Texas we've seen all season, or is it the Texas that played against Georgia? And I'm going to be honest, I think those are the same Texas teams. I just don't think Texas is – I think they're good offensively. I don't think they're Ohio State. I don't think they were – I just don't think they were that great. You know, we kind of picked apart Indiana's wins and talked about if they were college football playoff material. Texas didn't have a lot of great wins on their resume this season. They deserve to be in there, and they made it to the SEC championship game. They played Georgia tough in that final SEC championship game. But to me, like Ohio State, especially the way they're throwing the ball around, Texas's defense is going to be asking for breathers left and right in this game. I just don't think it's a good matchup for the Longhorns.
I don't either. And to be honest with you, I'm not sure who would be a good matchup for Ohio State when Ohio State is playing that way. I made this statement before the playoffs started, you know, when there was still talk before they named the 12 teams, would Penn State maybe get a matchup against an Alabama or an Ole Miss or a Georgia or whatever. And I made the statement, I don't think there's any matchup that I would be fearful for Penn State. And I included Ohio State in this. And that's after seeing, you know, Penn State match up against Ohio State, but it was also seeing Ohio State match up against Michigan. But also, we've been saying since the start of the season, the most talented team in the country is Ohio State. Their ceiling is higher than everybody else's. And I think it took us to the tournament before we saw the ceiling from this team.
Yeah, I think I completely agree with you. And again, I think it was a little bit of Ryan Day's reluctance to throw the football, like especially against some of the better teams that they played. They played conservative, I think, a little bit against Penn State the first time. I actually don't think they played that conservative. I think they played well in that loss to Oregon. They were just on the road and in the Big Ten. And it's a good Oregon team. So I think we've only seen that team now three times. I think we saw it in that Oregon game. And I'm not going to count some of those wishy-washy non-conference games that they played, so that was not a good competition. I agree. I think you've seen against two good teams, Tennessee and Oregon, what this Ohio State team can do, and just it's obliterate two of the top 10 teams in the country. And I as good as Texas is, I just think Ohio State is that much better. Like this could be a replication of the Ohio State Tennessee game, in my opinion.
Yes, I think so too. And as I said, I've been known to put a couple dollars down on some of these games here, Dustin. And I'm telling you, at 6 points. Now, I don't know if the fact that it's being played, the game's being played in Texas at the Cotton Bowl, if that's a factor in how people are setting the spread, if they're essentially calling this a home game for Texas, which would actually mean it's more on a neutral field, more like 9 or 10 points. But my take on it is it's Ohio State. I just, again, I always qualify it with which Ohio State. Are we going to see the Ohio State from the last two games? But hey, that's our most recent history, and it wasn't against mediocre teams. As you pointed out, two pretty good teams that they made look like a mismatch. They made it look like Alabama versus Vanderbilt. Oh, wait a minute. Sorry. Bad example. But you know what I'm saying.
I get your point. Yeah. I agree. I think Ohio State is head and shoulders above, and I don't think we're going to go back to see the Ohio State that played against Nebraska or Michigan, where they just had, you know, they just didn't look right. I think that this Ohio State team is here to stay.
I'm with you on it. Okay. Let's look at the other game, which our listeners are most interested in. That's Notre Dame and Penn State. And the Orange Bowl down in Miami. Notre Dame, I think they opened up as a 1.5 favorite, and it actually has now gone to 2.5 points. So Notre Dame, the favorite. Just first blush, your first take on this matchup, Dustin.
My first take on it is I just think this might be like a 13-10 game. I mean, both defenses are really good. I am curious, though. I'm curious to see, while I said I'm confident that Ohio State's here to stay, this aggressive style of offense and throwing it out, I kind of need to see it from James Franklin, because I feel like he thinks if he can keep this game close on the defensive side, they're going to put themselves in a chance to win. And sometimes in these type of games, he tends to play not to lose. I think if he plays aggressive and plays to win, I think that gives them a great shot, because I do think Penn State actually has superior athletes, not by a lot, but enough. And I think that, as you mentioned, the way they were able to run the ball, the fact that they were going over the top and they make teams stay honest, and that opens up the running attack for Catron Allen and Nick Singleton. But it's going to be tough. I feel like this is going to be a grinded out, but if they play not to lose, I don't think Notre Dame would run away with it, but I think Notre Dame, that's how Notre Dame wins. So we'll see. I mean, obviously keeping Riley Leonard intact is, in check is a big factor in this game, not letting him do the things he does with his legs, at least not too frequently, but the way Penn State's played the first two games, I like the Nittany Lions in this one.
Well, I think the interesting thing is the first blush, I gave you all the stats on running the ball these last three games, and I think that's the easy, lazy narrative. Oh, Penn State's running the ball. Make sure you run it. I think it's actually throw the ball some to set up the run, and the fact is where Penn State, I think, is a better team than Notre Dame is I think Penn State's the more explosive offense. And I know Penn State doesn't have the best wide receivers, but I think they have the much better quarterback throwing the ball, and they have the one individual best weapon catching the ball with Tyler Warren. I think that's where Penn State has the advantage. I think a 13-10 game favors Notre Dame.
I think what's going to be interesting is Penn State has done a good job of shutting down running backs this season, and I just talked about how they did that with Gianti. But can you do it with a team that has multiple backs that are very efficient? I mean, that's a way that Notre Dame can kind of wear down this defense. There's no advantage to me. And I'm interested to get your take. I don't know if there's an advantage in the trenches in this one. Like, I think both teams are very good up front, and it's almost like a neutralizing factor. So I think you're right. This may come down to the explosive play. I am intrigued because Notre Dame's got three guys, and then one of them's Riley Leonard, that have 700 yards or more rushing this season. And We've seen Jeremiah Love break off some big runs this season and then in the playoffs, especially against Indiana. Like, these guys can go. So, and Marcus Freeman, that dude does not. He coaches to win football games. I mean, whatever happened against Northern Illinois, scrap that, throw in the trash. That was an outlier. So you're gonna have to match him play for play on the coaching spectrum too.
That's it, and I think this is the way Notre Dame wants to play the game, the way that Georgia game went. And let's face it, there was not a lot of offense from Georgia. Notre Dame got helped out by turnovers from Georgia, a kickoff return, you know, the special teams. So I think in that kind of game, it's the advantage of Notre Dame, whereas I think if the game could be opened up a bit, and as you said, this is a question of will James Franklin get conservative and tight the way he was against Ohio State? Or will he play like he has these last couple games and say, you know what, we're going for it. We're putting it all out on the table. All right, Dustin, come to the point where I have to put some pressure on you. We've got these two semifinal games, Ohio State, a six-point favorite, Notre Dame, a 2.5-point favorite. I need you to give me scores for these two games. Help me out. Help out your betting friend here. Tell me how these games are going to go.
I'm going to say Ohio State. Boy, I hate saying this. Ohio State 41, Texas 17.
Wow. I can't say I disagree, though. I'll say wow, but I'm also going to say, yeah, I could see that happening. All right. How about the Fighting Irish and the Nittany Lions?
Yeah, this one's really tough. I'm going to go Penn State 17. I know you said that this type of game favors Notre Dame. I'm going Penn State 17, Notre Dame 13.
You know, Penn State-Notre Dame, it's an old-school rivalry, and they play kind of like the old-school teams, and that would be a very old-school score, 17-13, either way, but having Penn State win it. Last question for you, Dustin. I think we both agree Ohio State, they look like the best team in the country. They would have to go through Texas, then either Notre Dame or Penn State. Who has the best chance against Ohio State of those three teams?
Not going to play up to your audience, but I do believe that I think Notre Dame and Penn State have the two best chances. I think the reason I give the edge to Penn State is because they have played them once and they know what to expect. That to me is the difference. I think Penn State, Notre Dame, if they played 10 times, they win 5. And so that's, you know, each team wins 5, I should say. So that's why I think they both have a really good shot. But because Penn State knows Ohio State a little bit better, I'd give them an advantage. But they've also known them for the last 8 years and haven't beat them. So I'm a little nervous saying that.
I understand. I do think that familiarity might help, but I still think Ohio State's the best team. I'm going to give my pick. I'm going to go crazy here. I'm going to call it 28-17, the Nittany Lions. All right, Dustin, thank you. Thank you all for listening. Join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.